Institute.
Welcome back to the Weekly Roast. How's it going, guys? How the hell are you? How are your bums? And of course, how are your belly buttons? Do you notice that, guys? That's a little unique intro, given the content of today's show. Usually the intro would go something like, how are your hearts? And of course, how are your heads? Guys, what's going on? How are you doing? Listen, thank you, thank you, thank you to every single new listener we have had over the last couple of months. It's great to have you with us. And thank you to all of the OG listeners who have been with us from the very start. And of course, from the bottom of my heart, thank you to everybody who's been with me since 2019. When I first started opening my mouth on the airwaves. Good stuff. Guys, what's the story? How are you doing? Listen. Before we begin today's show, I need to do a little bit of housekeeping with you because I am at a crossroads and I'm not exactly certain how to best proceed. So myself and Darren are going traveling at the end of the month, okay? Don't worry, we're not going completely off the grid, but we're going traveling. We're going away for 6 weeks. Neither of us have ever been away for 6 weeks before, and I don't really know what to do when it comes to the Weekly Roast. So here are the options, right? I'm putting it to you. Let me know on Instagram, at Megan Mark, what you think we should do, and then we'll make a decision based upon the majority. This is a democracy at the end of the day, and we're all in this together. Okay, so option one is that A, we try to continue doing the Weekly Roast, although it will massively impede on my holiday and also realistically relationship, given the stress of me trying to put together the podcast remotely in the back of a van in France. Or, okay, that's option number one. We don't really like that option, do we? Option number two is that I do some sort of different podcast whilst on the road that's a little bit more footloose and fancy free, does not involve voice notes, is more of me traveling around France and doing a sort of diary of my various ups, downs, ins and outs of my French existence. That's option number two. And then option number three, of course, is that we just take a break for basically from July the 21st until the 1st of September. So it's like a 5 or 6 week break. I don't know. I would love to hear your thoughts. I'm eternally grateful for your support so far and for the growth of the podcast over the last few months. It's truly amazing. So thank you so much. I look forward to hearing from you. Now let's get into it. Okay, guys, it's the lies that are... Oh, sorry, excuse me, actually. I've just realised I haven't introduced my lovely co-pilot.
That's yet. Fine.
Edward.
No. You work away, Mark. It's like oh, this is your podcast.
Yeah. It's almost like it's in the name. Are you an Edward or an Edward?
I'm an Edward.
Edward.
Yes.
I love it.
You have to say it that way, though.
I only realised this after last week when we recorded. Do you remember I had a go with people with British names?
Edward John Smith. A little factoid, I have the same name as the captain of the Titanic. Middle name and all.
Edward John Smith.
And the beard. And yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Bruce Ismay. What would your thoughts be on him?
Who is Bruce Ismay?
So Bruce Ismay was the last man on the... he was the guy on the Titanic. He was either the designer... somebody would be able to correct me. Firstly, Titanic trivia is just the best. Let me guess. April the 4th, 1912.
Wow.
I think, is when the Titanic set off on her maiden voyage. Didn't go too well. You'll have to see the movie. But Bruce Ismay was the guy who got into the lifeboat, right? He got into the lifeboat with the women and children, even though he was supposed to stay on the ship. However, it's really sad. He then lived, he was treated like a complete pariah and he was like lambasted in the press. But then he just became an alcoholic and a recluse, and like his whole family were tarnished and tortured by this like horrible secret that was like granddad was this coward. The Titanic was never allowed to be spoken about at family dinners, which reasonable enough request. But yeah, and then was it John Mahon? Or Montague, or was it one of the poets wrote this fabulous poem about him and his life and just the guilt, almost a la Lady Macbeth.
Wow.
Completely turning him insane.
It's a fascinating part of history.
The big girl's blouse. Bruce,
you yellow belly bastards.
Imagine,
you know,
Twitter was around now when the Titanic went down.
Just sending Bruce email DMs at 2 a.m. I don't know if you know this, Bruce, but yeah, phenomenal.
Wow. Okay.
Titanic trivia. Okay, guys, look, it's the lies our parents told us. As most of you will know at this stage, we're going to start off nice and easy, nice and gentle. We're going to flirt with the... doesn't always need to be sexual related. We're just going to start off nice and easy, and then as we progress, the things will get more and more sordid, depraved and insane. And believe me, by the way, they are absolutely sordid, depraved and insane. Welcome back to the Weekly Rose, guys. It's great to have you with us. All the best. I don't know why I'm signing off. Okay, goodbye. Let's go.
So when I was younger, my mother told me and my sisters that there's poo in the ice cream machines.
Good stuff.
You know, the machines in shops and the ice cream vans that go around. So obviously, we never wanted one of those ice creams because that's disgusting. And it wasn't until I moved to Dublin and I was out in Dunleerium, one of my friends said to me, like, we have to get an ice cream from Teddy's. And I started saying, ew, no. And it was only when I said it out loud, I realised how absolutely ridiculous an idea it is that there would be poo in every ice cream machine in Ireland. Yeah, so I was in my 20s the first time I had a 99.
Okay, this is completely and utterly bananas. I mean, surely be more creative with the lie to your children rather than just, there's shit in it. Do you know what I mean? Can you not do more than just be like, oh yeah, sorry, mum, could I have that? No, why not? There's shit in it, actually. Oh, okay. Well, I suppose, of course I can't then. I'm surprised they're for sale. I'm surprised there's a queue on a sunny day down Dunleary Pier of people wanting these shitty frozen delights. But still, this is... boss, do we have the ingredients for the ice cream machine? Yeah. What are they again? Sugar. Yeah, got that. Gelatin. Yeah, got that. Shit. Yeah, got that. And the sprinkles. Got the sprinkles. Yeah, got the sprinkles. I knew I forgot the flakes. I knew I'd forget something. This is one of those rumours and sort of urban myths that always amazes me. It's not dissimilar to when people said that drug dealers would put rat poison in their drugs. What sort of a drug dealer is going to the effort of going down to the hardware store, inquiring about rat poison, trying to purchase it in bulk? Surely just use a bit of flour or baby powder. Do you know what I mean? Or some other sort of sugar. I don't know. I'm not a drug dealer. But like, you know, surely there are alternatives to rat poison that they could use as a substitute in their narcotics. No? Riddle me that, please. No, in fact, don't. That's dodgy territory for me. On we go.
So when we were younger, we used to have chicken for dinner, you know, regularly enough. And every now and again, you'd be eating your chicken and noticing that it's getting pinker as you're eating it. And say, you'd say to mom, oh, how come my chicken's pink? Is that okay? And she would say, oh, yeah, God, no, that just means it was a young chicken. And I totally took this at face value and finished eating my dinner. Not a bother. Never got sick, I don't think. But anytime... for years after, any time I'd be eating chicken at home and it was a bit pink, I'd say, oh, look, mum, here's another young chicken.
Okay. As a matter of interest, did your mum always also tell you, like, that red traffic lights were an invitation to run across the road? Do you know what I mean? Oh, and Cliona, make sure to retrieve the breadcrumbs at the bottom of the toaster with a long metal prong or perhaps a wet fork, you know? Pink chicken. Choice doesn't come into it when it comes to cooking chicken. Do you know what I mean? Like, you can't have it medium rare. You can't have chicken tartare or chicken ceviche. This is completely insanity. There aren't like a smorgasbord of options when it comes to chicken. Much like cheating, by the way. It's either you've cooked it or you didn't. I don't know why the cheating is the cooking, but like, you either did it or you didn't. There's no grey area or a pink area. You either cook the chicken or you don't cook the chicken. That's the end of it, okay? She must be barking mad. Brilliant.
Barking.
That is just...
What?
That's the highbrow comedy we come here for.
Barking. Sorry, who walked into the room there for a second?
Mr. Bean. Humour. On we go.
My dad used to tell me that he was the founding member of Boyzone and that when I was born, he needed to live a more normal life. So he retired and Ronan Keating replaced him. So that's my dad. And I full on believe him.
This is just incredible. I mean, you shouldn't be offended by it because at the end of the day, it's only words. There you go.
No.
But like, I love the way, firstly, him saying that he was in Boyzone is this is such a dad lie. It also isn't a million miles away from the sort of lies I'd be coming out with on Bumble dates, when I was living in London, you know, between the years of 2018 and 2020, that would be sort of my shtick. Like, yeah, no, I was actually in Westlife, but they just had to get rid of me because I was too good at dancing and rapping. You know, my fame just hadn't stretched as far as Hackney Wick. Anyway, yeah, a PhD in spoof I had back in the day. A founding member of Boyzone. I love the way, like, he says, or she says, founding member of Boyzone, as if there was a real meeting of the minds, you know, up there with like CERN, perhaps, or NASA, whenever Boyzone was formed.
Like he's written out of history, like he's Marie Curie.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
with the great injustices of history.
Dermot from Raheny. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
Where's my statue?
Yeah, yeah. Painter, decorator, now former founding member of Boyzone before he retired. Okay, fabulous. On we go.
So when we were growing up, we were told by our parents that there was a girl called Susie living in the attic. Don't know where this came from, don't know why it started or how it started, but basically, if you were bold in any way, you were threatened with being put up in the attic with Susie. And so if you did anything wrong, it'd be like, oh, do you want to go up to the attic to Susie? And that was it. Like, you didn't need to be told again. Or any noise we'd hear around the house when we were growing up, we'd be like, oh, Susie's moving around, that must be Susie or whatever. And like, we used to tell our friends about Susie and everything. But then as I got a little bit older, like maybe 11 or 12, yes, I did believe in Susie at that age. You know, you'd hear a noise around the house and you'd be like, oh, there's Susie now, walking around the place. So yeah, it went on for a very long time. Don't know how it started or why it started, but we were fully convinced that a girl called Susie lived in the attic.
This is completely and utterly terrifying, by the way. Now, I haven't told Ed this one yet, but listen to this. Somebody else wrote in, not dissimilar to Susie, because we're going to get into this. Somebody else wrote in saying that their parents told them that their house was haunted by a ghost child with willies for hands. Like, good stuff. Mum, I can't sleep. What's that noise? Oh, nothing to worry about, Mark. Probably just the infant ghoul with dicks for fingers.
It's,
you know,
cock,
I mean?
Hand. It's cock hand. He'll get you.
This is, like, no wonder, by the way, no wonder why we are a nation of people who require therapy. This is dicks for fingers. How does that even work, by the way? How does he sign his name? Does he have to get himself aroused in order to enter the passcode on his phone? Or does he just sort of slide his fingers across?
Also, not to get too Freudian about it, what's going on with the mother?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Can we...
With the Ganesh statue on the windowsill.
Of penises.
Just penises for hands. We are, like, this is what's wrong with the society. We are terrifying our children. Mum, what's that squeaky noise? Oh, it's infant ghoul. Dick hands is coming to get you. Like, oh my God. And these things happen in Irish childhoods. Uh-huh. And then all of a sudden we reach 18 and we're expected to just go out into the wild and have functional relationships with ourselves and our bodies and the world around us. This is, yeah, Willy Mitts is just phenomenal. Willy Mitts. Willy Mitts is like a sort of a Roddy Doyle story. Roddy Doyle has taken a turn. Roddy Doyle has closed his laptop. He's finally shut down that Facebook account. Do you remember that?
What?
You can't really be having a go at Roddy Doyle, but do you remember there was a period of time between 2014 and 2018 when, like, anything that would happen in the news and Roddy Doyle would go, two old fellas sitting at a pub.
Please, talk about that.
Time. And the guy would go, what's gay marriage? And he'd go,
it's
just two blokes loving each other. And don't get me wrong, obviously, by the way, we agree with the sentiment, but you can't be doing that about, like, the Henri's handball in the World Cup and marriage equality, Roddy. Willy Mitts. On we go.
Hi, Mark. When we were younger, my mother told us that if we put our finger in our belly buttons, our bums would fall off.
Yeah, classic. Just the bum falling off, of course. Oh, don't do that. Why is that? Your bum will fall off. But of course, the biggest threat to any Irish child, okay, growing up in the 1980s or 90s or 70s, by the way, was that either a man in a van was going to get you. That was just a fact. You know, you'd swear that kids were being plucked off the estate on a weekly basis. So a man in a van was going to get you or your arse was going to fall off. One of those two things was an absolute certainty, like in South Sudan. Okay.
Oh,
yeah.
Here we are.
We've jumped. Pulling a geographic. In South Sudan, the biggest threat to children, like, you know, you'd see on TV, was like clean drinking water or starvation, you know, real things. In Lachlan's town, it was death by arse falling off. It was, oh, sorry, did you hear about Jimmy Muldowney? No. Jimmy Muldowney, he's really good at Unihawk and has loads of Pokemon cards. Yeah. Arse fell off. He's dead. Sorry? Yeah, his arse is just gone. Where's Martin Hughes? He hasn't been in school in ages. His ass fell off. What did they do with the ass then? So many fucking questions. We never even got told, like, what's so dangerous about an arse falling off in the first place?
Went into ice cream machines.
Oh, but...
come on now.
Oh, the fucking callback. Let's
it's
go.
An industrial complex, Mark.
I think it's time we have a very serious conversation about the state of snacking in this country. It's embarrassing. However, Cadbury have finally decided to cater to those of us with actual taste buds. For those of us brave enough to ask, no, do you know what? To demand more from their treats. They've launched the new Cadbury Dairy Milk Biscoff Bar. It's the collab of the century. The smooth expertise of Cadbury meets the main character energy of Biscoff. It's got that crunch, that caramelised vibe, and honestly, it's Ireland's new icon. It's love at first bite. And unlike your last three situationships, this one is actually here to stay. Grab one, try it, and stop settling for mid-tier snacks.
Guys, I hope you're enjoying the weekly roast. This is a very, very funny episode for me. I'm really enjoying hearing some about the lies your parents told you. I think the most important thing about this, and by the way, the roast in general, the reasons why it's actually good for my mental health is because I spend too much of my time in my own head, ruminating, being introspective, and thinking that I'm like this isolated. I'm isolated in my weirdness and all the rest. This podcast has taught me that everybody is completely and utterly insane and we're all just mental. So there's safety, there's solace, there's liberation in all of us collectively going mad. Guys, it's the weekly roast on Parents Our Lies Told Us. If you are new to the show, you've got like 24 other episodes. Well, geez, we're nearly halfway through the year. 24, 25 other episodes to sink your teeth into. And last but not least, I just wanted to say, because I received so many voice notes for this one, if your voice note didn't make it into the show, please know that that's nothing to do with me. The responsibility of that entirely falls on Ed. And But please keep sending them in. It's not indicative of your voice note not being brilliant. It's just a case of it, you know, whatever with any given show. Anyway, on we go. It's great to have you with us.
So basically, my dad wanted us to learn to be safe, like being home alone when him and my mom both went back to work. And I was about 11 and my sister was like 8 or 9. And he told us that there was this group of people that would be watching us and they knew like what our daily routine was when my mom and dad were in and out of the house and when we were in school and stuff. And he would like just come home at random times when we were home alone. Like he'd come home early and start banging on the door, banging on the window. He'd ring the phone on no caller ID, like our home phone. And one day anyway, he decided that he was going to just start going ham on the door handle. And he actually broke the door. So my mom told me he wasn't allowed to do that anymore. But like we still believed it for years. Like we didn't know. And yeah, to this day, me and my sister, we still lock the door if we're like down in our rooms, if we're out the back garden, and we don't answer the home phone ever. Like, I don't think I've ever answered the home phone in my life.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know, look, there's preparing your children for real life, and then there is instilling sheer terror in the heart of the ones you love the most. If the father is listening to this podcast, mate, you've made your children more paranoid than 14-year-old me after smoking his first proper bit of weed and wondering, will I ever be able to experience life without a tsunami of anxiety flowing beneath my stream of consciousness? The answer is no, of course. This is bananas, Ed.
I was a little taken aback by this one. I think that father has done damage.
When you've got the baseball bat and the balaclava on and you're doing this to be like...
But he's pulling the handle so hard, he breaks the door. Is he okay?
The wife has to be like, Tony, please stop.
And the wife said, would you mind, Derek, would you mind just cooling it down? The girls are fine.
Derek, these fucking pantomime. This is, yeah, no, bananas. Bananas. Anyway, look, on we go.
Hi, Mark. So, yes, my dad told lots of stories, but the one that stands out for me is he told me that he used to fight rebels in the Congo.
Sorry.
And he cut off their ears and then he wore the ears around his neck on like a piece of leather. I think they're called leather thong. It's like
I don't care.
It's like a leather necklace thing. Yeah.
So
What?
Okay, when I put up the question box of this on Instagram, the lies I was expecting were like, my dad told me that he scored a goal for Ireland, or, you know, oh, I used to be friends with Bono. I wasn't expecting I was a vigilante jungle assassin,
yes,
who sliced off the ears of Congolese freedom fighters and then wore them around Dundrum like a set of shoopy fucking earrings or a necklace. This is a dangling rung of ears as like little miniature military trophies. Your dad has lost his fucking mind. Dad, will you tell me a story before bed?
Well, would you like a real one or would you like a makey-up one?
A makey-uppy one, please. Maybe about Barbies or me being a pop star.
Right. I entered the undergrowth at midnight, covered by a cloak of darkness. There was a group of West African rebels straight in front of me, so I whipped out my machete and sunk the blade into the tips of their earlobes. And then I started chewing.
Dad, please. you need to see someone about the divorce. This is fucking bananas.
I have a theory about this.
Go on.
1992,
yeah,
a film called Universal Soldier came out.
Okay.
Well worth looking back on in a non-ironic sense. It's one of those action films. Dolph Lundgren is in that film, and one of the great lines in movie history is, he's a soldier. He's got a necklace of earrings around his neck.
There you go.
And someone said, this is my favorite line of all time. Someone goes, hey, blah, 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 blah. He goes, turns around, yes, I'm all ears.
That is unbelievable. So there you go.
I think that the old boy had, yeah, watched Universal Soldier, which he was absolutely correct to do so.
That's much better than what I had. I was going to say something like, maybe he watched too much Jason Bourne. Jason Bourne in the ear off
you. Jason Bourne.
Jason Bourne in the ear off
Mark.
No, we'll stick to the other one. On we go.
In our house, there was 5 boys and 3 girls. And my younger sister, one day said to me, Dad, where's my Willy? Because obviously the 5 lads had their Willies. And she was wondering where her Willy was. And my dad said, the lads out there building the houses, their diggers chopped your Willy off, and we'd have still slagger about it to this day. We'd have been in and not laughing. But yeah, so that's what happened to her Willy. That's why she doesn't have one.
Okay, the way that this was just said there, it was as if you were handing out Capri Suns in a party. It's like, well, no, those lads are sorted. They've got their willies now. They've had their willies. She's got their willies. But where's my willy? You know, there was a lot of willy talk there. Borderline erotica for anybody with an attraction towards the cylindrical prongs popularized by the male species, you know. Where's my willy? Look, it's a big question. We've all asked questions. We've all asked that of ourselves and others at times in our lives, you know. Where is my Willy?
Where's my Willy?
Where's my Willy? A collection of short stories by Roddy Doyle about growing up in the 90s. Where's my Willy and what time's your dinner at? A warm your heart, laugh out loud and cry your eyes out anthology of Irish youth. Brilliant.
Here comes Dick Mittens.
By the way, I do, for the record, I love Roddy Doyle and his books are some of the most fabulous things of all time. Just let the record show. On we go.
So when I was younger, about 6 or 7, I was always this inquisitive child, but I asked my mum how babies are made, and basically for years my mum told me that basically the mum and dad had to lie down in the bed, and right, that there was a seed that the dad had to pass on to the mum but through their belly buttons. So basically the mum and dad had to join up their belly buttons, and that was how the woman became pregnant. So I got some shock when we had the ORC talks in 5th and 6th class, and this wasn't the case.
I thought she was going to say, I got some shock the night of prom, you know, when Billy Carmichael took me in his Cadillac up to Old Lover's Creek. He said he always wanted to make love to a valedictorian, so I immediately started smearing my belly button against his torso. I think of all the misconceptions about sex, this one isn't actually that ridiculous. Like, the seed part is correct. Even with my limited and, let's be honest, embarrassing grasp on the science of reproduction, I can tell that there's definitely a seed in there somewhere. But, you know,
there was a story of a famous story of a Chinese couple who hadn't conceived for years, and the doctor finally asked them. This is true now, by the way.
Genuinely.
And they were trying to have intercourse through her belly button.
I think I, as my idea of sex, up until quite recently, let's be honest, was just naked in bed kissing.
Yeah.
As a child.
Is it not?
Yeah. I mean, there's... I didn't think that there was any penetrative affair.
Any other people involved?
No. On we go.
I think I was complaining to my dad when I was a teenager about walking home from school and getting caught in the rain and complaining that I didn't have a lift. And his response was that him and his brothers when they used to walk to school in the winter time in order to keep warm because they didn't have shoes, that they'd piss on each other's feet. Sorry. And I believed this until I was 25 and then copped on to realise it was absolute utter nonsense because my dad was born in the 60s and they would have had shoes and bikes and modes of transport. So yeah, believed this until I was 25, which is quite embarrassing.
Okay, hold on a second here. Because they have shoes and bikes. Look, I have a brother, okay? I have a lovely older brother, a very beautiful man. Not having access to a bicycle or a pair of Clarks isn't the only thing preventing me from pissing on his feet. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
The units of separation between my penis, urine, and my brother's fucking trotters is not a mere e-scooter or a size 7 pair of Crocs. Oh, freezing, isn't it? Yeah, it is, mate. Would you piss on my toes there? Sorry, just piss on my toes. I'm not bothered with those woolly socks or lace-up boots this winter. Just wee on my trotters. This is complete insanity, Edward.
Just reminds me of the song, the Monty Python song, you know, piss on my feet and tell me that you love me.
But like, what's... I'm going to break it to you, Anya. You come from a family of freaks. Mum, my fingers are cold. Okay, let me drink a gallon of water. I'll be right with you. You know, what sort of family do you come from wherein cold feet, that is the treatment of cold feet? It's like, oh, Judy got stung by a wasp. Who's got the dildo? And has anyone woken up Nana? Like, what sort of rules did your families have?
I think it's time we have a very serious conversation about the state of snacking in this country. It's embarrassing. However, Cadbury have finally decided to cater to those of us with actual taste buds. For those of us brave enough to ask, no, do you know what? To demand more from their treats. They've launched the new Cadbury Dairy Milk Biscoff Bar. It's the collab of the century. The smooth expertise of Cadbury meets the main character energy of Biscoff. It's got that crunch, that caramelised vibe, and honestly, it's Ireland's new icon. It's love at first bite. And unlike your last three situationships, this one is actually here to stay. Grab one, try it, and stop settling for mid-tier snacks.
Oh, okay, guys, here we are. It's the stage of the podcast where the wheels completely fall off. I hope you all enjoy this next section. It's not for the faint-hearted. It's not for the faint of spirit, soul, mind or heart. I've said heart already. Guys, I hope you enjoy it. And as always, it's great to have you with us. Thank you so much. If you're enjoying the show, if you enjoyed today's episode, shoot me a message on Instagram at Megan Mark. Let me know what parts of it you liked. And I wish you all the best in your life and your love. Okay, let's go.
Hey, Mark. This would have been in the 80s when, like, kind of late 80s. I was kind of like 15 and I used to hate sleeping, or I just really couldn't sleep anyway. I'd be with mum and my dad always went down to the pub at 10:30 every night on the weeknights till about 12:30. And they used to have, you know, that kind of fancy box at the end of your bed.
Easy.
It's not a chaise lounge, but it was just a box that fucking held crap. And I used to look in it and I used to find the Playboys. And I'd say to dad, what's the story with the Playboys? Like, does mom know about this? And he'd be like, so innocently looking at me going, they're your mom's. So just don't ever say anything. Like, because obviously she'd have a foot canary. And I'd be looking at him going, are you actually serious? And he'd be like, yeah, look, I'll give you extra pocket money. Just don't ever say anything. And I never did.
Wow.
I mean, he thought on his feet.
His feet, yeah. I think that's a smart Irish dad move there. Put it on the mother and go back down to the pub.
Yeah, and the bribery.
The bribery.
It's sort of got the, it's got the basic, the holy trinity of Irish parenting. Manipulation, turning you against the other parent, bribery to keep fucking quiet. And then, of course, the majority of your childhood being spent in involving a pub, you know?
And I leave a little kind of childhood trauma with you there, yeah. Love. Go on.
It's like a Roddy Doyle. You can't just leave Roddy alone.
Roddy out of it.
What's Roddy done? He's a national bloody treasure. Okay, let's go. It's about to get sloppy now, guys. So just please hold on to your proverbial hats. It's going to get sloppy. Let's go.
So when I was about 7 or 8, I walked into my parents' room one morning and spotted something on the floor.
No.
As I went to pick it up, my dad was like, oh no, don't touch that. It's just the wrapper off a chocolate bar. It actually ended up being a used condom.
Oh, like this, just that. Hold on a second here. what's your father doing? You know, peeling this thing off him like a cold dripping wetsuit.
Please stop.
In the cubicle of an adventure center, which is the most shameful 15 minutes of anyone's life. You know, you've signed up for some form of adventure center thing. Okay, actually, do you know what?
That's very specific.
And the long story short is that I'm saying it's similar to peeling the condom off your penis. That's where we're getting to. But so this guy takes his condom off and he flings it across his own bedroom, like it with the negligence of it being a dripping wet tea bag into a sink. Okay. You know, just flinging it across. You're not having an affair in a travel lodge, Declan, just off the motorway. You're in your own bloody bedroom. Show some decorum, please. You know, there's kids in the house. Also, he said it's a chocolate wrapper. What sort of chocolate are you eating wherein it resembles a used condom? You know, at least say, oh, sorry, that's a new version of the Petit Filou Froube that's just come out.
It's a Mr. Freeze.
It's a Mr. Freeze. It's a milky Mr. Freeze. Or some sort of teeth whitening. Don't do a demonstration on your wife. Like, this is just...
Jesus, sorry. The last thing I'm going to think about before I die is milky Mr. Freeze. Thank you for that.
Why is the chocolate bar wrapper on the floor? And why is that weird chocolate all around Mum's mouth? No, you just can't. This is stop. Okay, guys, this next voice note, it's slightly harder to hear. So I just want to give you what he wrote in first and then the voice note we will play afterwards. So he goes, I caught my dad doing my mam doggy. Said he was massaging her lower back.
Are we ready?
We're ready. Let's go.
So my mum and dad separated when I was 4 years old. And this happened when I was 14, I think. So I was upstairs and I lived with my mum. I was upstairs in the house. And I walked into my mum's bedroom. And all I could see was a gentleman there with trousers around his ankles. I just saw the shape of my mum in front of him. And it was 14, so Google wasn't around. So I didn't know what the book was. So we hadn't seen porn or anything. That was only 14. So I turned around and it was my dad. And he said he was massaging my mum's back because she had twisted her playing tennis the day before. Now, the two of them were married to two other people this day. Now, they got back together a couple of years after. So, yeah, so that was the loyal thing.
I think this is the plot point of The Parent Trap 2. This was the discarded. Instead of the parents meeting on the cruise ship and falling madly in love again over a glass of champagne, it was they were going to do each other doggy, you know, and...
Yeah.
Look, it's one way to... It apparently worked. They got back together. I'm delighted for them.
Nice little sojourn into the kind of soap opera around that, I thought, towards the end there.
Yeah. It's...
As it were, fleshed it out.
I just feel like, you know, if I've... You know, you meet your estranged wife and you have a quick coffee, okay? And you look at each other longingly in the eyes and you say, do you know what? There's so much history behind us. There's so much future ahead of us. I'm just intoxicated by your scent. Maybe we should. And then you fall into each other's arms. You don't go straight to doggy. Surely surely it's missionary. You know, surely if you're reconciling with an estranged spouse, it's missionary.
You don't want to look them in the eye. There's something wrong. From the get-go.
Yeah, like, you know, you don't go straight to, come on, like holding a sack of spuds, Helena. Like, do you know what I mean?
I love you so much. Please turn around.
Look, I think we should give this one more go. And if anything, for the kids, bend over, please. I've got fitness in 45 minutes. I've got a tennis match. On we go.
Hi, Mark. My boys, they're in their 30s now. They used to, at that age, take longer in the shower. So I read them on my own as a mother. And I had to do something because every time I went into the shower, they didn't know how to clean the shower after themselves. So I told them if they kept wanking in the shower, that the willies would fall off. And one of my sons believed it for a long time. So that was my lie.
The most harrowing thing about that voice note is that only one of your sons adhered after the threat of his penis falling off is one thing. But his mother cleaning up after him wasn't enough to deter him in his pursuit of masturbation.
Nothing will stop.
Like, oh my God. So this means that one brother heard all of that, was like, yeah, okay, so that means that every time I do this, that she has to come in afterwards. Like, this is just, like, unbelievable. And your willy might fall off. Or I don't think I'd need to know that my willy might fall off. My willy might fall off. I think I just need to know my mum going, by the way, Mark, the next time you're up there wailing away at yourself, you know, on page 3, you're thinking about Babe Station from the night before, because that's what we had back in my day.
Ah, yeah.
Babe Station or Fashion TV, by the way.
Yeah. Or what was the French thing?
On Sky Digital, I remember when I first got Sky Digital, I was like, this is the most exotic thing in the world. I was like 14, and there was a channel called Fashion TV, which during the day was just run of the mill fashion. But at nighttime, had like the, I don't know, this is probably why I'm quite interested in fashion, but it would be like, oh, here's the Bottega Veneta Spring Summer for 2003, and it'd be all bikinis, and lots of those bikinis would be transparent, and I would see it.
Oh, yeah.
Now, this is sort of not dissimilar to, I remember Ricky Gervais used to tell this story, and it's a story as old as time, but it's the famous one about the guy who was studying for his university exams, and he's up in his bedroom and he decides to, as most men do, or did at least when they studied, that they would be just distracted by the mundanity of their academic pursuits and decide to have a little bit of light distraction in the way of masturbation. And he decides to have a wank, but he used to put on headphones inexplicably whenever he was wanking. Maybe he was listening to erotic tapes or whatever. So he gets into his bed, he puts on the headphones and he starts to have the wank. He then finishes the wank. That's grand. And as he comes, sort of comes, brilliant, but like as he finishes his wank and then he comes to, as it were, he looks beside him and there's a tray of tea and biscuits. So his mum has come into the house, knocked on the room, looked, opened the door, seen that her son is there, lying in bed, going at himself, and thought, yeah, I'll just bring these and put them beside him, you know?
I didn't want to disturb you, dear. You seem busy.
Okay, let's go. Last but not least.
Oh, no. Here we go.
Hi, Mark. I was about 10 years of age when I happened to be rooting in my parents' room and happened to look under their mattress and find a book. The book was called The Joy of Sex. And I thought, God, what's this? So I did have a little read through the pages and I thought, Jesus Christ, what on earth is this? I put it back. Obviously I got caught because the book wasn't where it was supposed to be. And Mum had said, was anybody written in my room? And I said, yeah, me. I had a look. And I said to her, I found a book under your mattress. And she said, oh, that's a special Bible the Pope sent us when we got married. And I keep it there for safekeeping. Yeah, good woman, Pat, because page number 9 had the wheelbarrow. And the wheelbarrow consisted of a female on her hands, with her legs up in the air and your man driving it into her. The wheelbarrow. Never be the same again.
Just, okay, a lot to get into here, but when she says the wheelbarrow will never be the same again, does she mean gardening? Or does she mean her getting it driven into her and then she'll just be thinking of her parents? Now, okay, here's the good news, guys, or potentially the bad news. The Joy of Sex, Ed, is actually a real book.
Oh, it is.
And I've done some research here. 1972, it is an illustrated sex manual by British author Alex Comfort. Now, I actually went online, pathetically, I hope Darren doesn't look at my search history, because I had to go and look at this and purchase a copy of this on Google Books. Okay. Speaking of books, by the way, my audiobook has just been released. This is not a self-help book by Mark Megan. If you haven't bought a copy for your holidays, please consider it. Anyway, the book, okay, is out. I just thumbed through the introduction. There's a section here on the vulva. There's a section on the breasts. Which did you prefer?
Boob man.
You're a boob. Mm. You're a boob man rather than a vulva.
Well, I mean, I like both. Can we not talk about this?
We can. I'm just going to have to read an excerpt. For those of you, again, faint of heart, please fast forward. But this is the section on breasts. In our maturer years, wrote Darwin, when an object of vision is presented to us which bears any similitude to the form of the female bosom, we feel a general glow of delight, which seems to influence all our senses. And, if the object be not too large, we experience an attraction to embrace it with our lips, as we did in early infancy the bosom of our mothers. Breasts are the natural second target, but often the first one we reach for. Just how sensitive they are, in men as well as women, varies enormously. Size is unimportant, as with other sexual organs. Thank fucking God, someone's... Some don't answer at all, even in the emphatically non-frigid. Some answer in extremely gentle ways. Some to a very rough handling, but they are sensitive structures. Don't let your residual anger at having been weaned get the better of you. Okay. That's the section on breasts.
Oh, is that real?
Yeah, this is 100% real. And then there's a paragraph here wherein it basically... it says this is... It's basically saying that if you want to use breasts instead of the vagina to complete the intercourse you're entitled to, it says...
Okay.
There's a lot of mutuality from intermammary intercourse, which I've never heard of before. This is a good expedient on occasion when she doesn't feel like vaginal intercourse. Lay her half flat on pillows, kneel astride, big toe to her clitoris if she needs helping, and your foreskin fully retracted. Either you or she can then hold the breasts together, wrap them around the shaft.
I can still hear you.
Rub the glands with them. It should protrude clear just below her chin. An orgasm from this position, if she gets one, is round, like a full coital orgasm, and she feels it inside. Breast orgasms from licking and handling are in between and feel. Rub the semen well into her breasts until you finish. I can't go on. I am rouge. There is frisson down the back of my neck. My cheeks are smouldering red and I'm embarrassed. Anyway, last but not least, I'll just finish with the sentence on the vulva. As magic as the penis and so many males, slightly scary. It looks like a wound and bleeds regularly. It swallows the penis and regurgitates it limp. Let's fucking
what
go.
What in God's name?
Guys, thank you so much for listening to The Weekly Roast. I was not expecting today's episode to take such a turn for the depraved, but it was wholeheartedly very, very enjoyable. Please let me know what you think we should do for the month of August and the last week or so of July. I really am at a loss. I don't know what to do. I don't want to lose the momentum, but at the same time, I don't want to try and force something when I'm away and not be able to get the show and deliver it in the way that we do each week here in Marconi House. And I would never want to disappoint my Bower overlords. So let me know what you think. And again, from the bottom of my heart, thank you so much for listening to the show each week. This is like sitting here in this chair right now is my favorite time of the week. And I can't wait for the next few months. As I keep alluding to, there's stuff happening in the background that you'll be hearing about soon. And I'm going to be going around. We will leave it vague and ambiguous for the moment. But look, it's great to have you with us. If you want to support me at the moment, and if you do enjoy the show, please send it to a friend of yours. This is the greatest way for the show to grow. We're like at the top of the comedy charts. Well, number three. There's two in front of us, but it's not that we don't like them. It's just that we don't even acknowledge their existence. I really appreciate your support. Thank you so much, and I hope you're doing all right. Not everybody that listens to this show is always going through a good time, and I am conscious of that because I received a couple of messages last week to that effect. Obviously not going to name and shame. Mind yourselves. We're in this together. Okay, let's go. I think it's time we have a very serious conversation about the state of snacking in this country. It's embarrassing. However, Cadbury have finally decided to cater to those of us with actual taste buds. For those of us brave enough to ask, no, do you know what? To demand more from their treats. They've launched the new Cadbury Dairy Milk Biscoff Bar. It's the collab of the century. The smooth expertise of Cadbury meets the main character energy of Biscoff. It's got that crunch, that caramelized vibe, and honestly, it's Ireland's new icon. It's love at first bite. And unlike your last three situationships, this one is actually here to stay. Grab one, try it, and stop settling for mid-tier snacks.